Good afternoon. A schedule update for you from this morning. The President spoke this morning with Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki via secure video teleconference and from the Situation Room. The Prime Minister provided an update on the status of several important measures before the Iraqi Parliament, and he reemphasized the importance of advancing these measures and of making progress on political reconciliation within Iraq. Welcome, Jim. It's like your teachers used to do that to you, I'm sure. And with that, I'll go to questions. Go ahead, Ben.
Dana, there were a series of 5-4 decisions from the Supreme Court today, campaign finance, the student speech, faith-based matters. They all went the way the conservatives wanted. Is this the kind of pattern that the White House had in mind when the president nominated Roberts and Alito?
Towards the end of any Supreme Court session, you tend to have the harder cases decided later because it just take longer to grapple with, and so you get more split decisions as you get towards the end of the session, which is June 30th. I haven't had a chance to review all of the cases. There were some that the government won and some that the government lost. I think your point is about conservatives. But, you know, the president's position is that in any case you're going to have someone who loses and someone who wins. But we can all be confident that we have fantastic Supreme Court justices. These are the type of people that the president wanted to have on the bench. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito are proving themselves to be ones who have the intellectual vigor that they can bring to the bench. These are decisions that are of the most difficult ones to grapple with that we deal with in our society. And so since the judiciary is a third branch of government, I think that we can all be very proud that we have a system in which they can make decisions, even if they are close decisions, and we as a country, we abide by them.
Do you not see a pattern there?
I think that it's wrong. I do think that it would not be a wise course to try to divine a pattern based on these decisions that came at the end of the session. I don't know of anybody who is actually describing this as a pattern when we lost, I think it was 9-0 on an environmental case about 2 months ago.
Dana?
Yes, Martha.
We're talking about branches of government. Can we go back to Vice President Cheney again and the argument that he's not part of the executive branch? Does the president believe he's part of the executive branch?
Look, I think that that is an interesting constitutional question, and I think that lots of people can debate it. I think when we were talking about the EO from last week, we've gone over that several times. You probably don't want me to go over it again. But the vice president, any vice president has legislative and executive functions. Every vice president has legislative and executive functions. The executive functions are given to him by the president. For example, the vice president's paycheck comes from the Senate. That's an interesting constitutional question. When we're talking about this EO, it is separate and apart from, with the president and the vice president oversee the executive agencies. Supreme Court precedent shows that the vice president and the president are not seen as an agency when it comes to executive orders.
I know that's your argument about an agency, but it's very separate from the argument the vice president is making. And what is the president, what is the White House's view of the argument the vice president is making on whether or not he's part of the executive branch?
I'm not opining on it because the president did not intend for the vice president to be subject as an agency in that section of the EO.
Entirely different arguments. So you don't support vice presidents. You don't support the vice president.
I'm not opining on it either way.
But Dana, how could the vice president earlier in the administration argue he didn't have to turn over records about the Energy Task Force, for example, because he was a member of the executive branch?
You could ask the Supreme Court, who ruled in his favor.
But he did not say, I'm a member of the legislative branch as well, so I don't have to. I mean, he clearly stated that there was strong executive power and he didn't have to turn over these records. Now, when it suits his interests, he seems to be saying a different legal argument.
Yeah. Look, I'm not a legal scholar, and there's plenty of them that you can find in Washington, D.C., but just that very point that you're making there shows that he has functions in both the executive branch and the legislative branch.
But he didn't mention those functions, both dual functions, in the earlier legal arguments at the beginning of the administration. He's only used the executive branch arguments.
You can try to call his office and try to get more information. I'm not opining on his argument that his office is making. What I can tell you is that the president did not intend for him to be treated separately from himself in this executive order regarding the ISU office.
So also, though, you've mentioned a moment ago that the vice president gets his paycheck from the Senate. Does the White House then also believe he should get funding for the vice president's office from the legislative branch instead of from the executive branch?
I don't know.
You just noted that.
The reason I noted that is because I'm trying to illustrate the point that he has roles in both in both of the legislature and in the executive branch.
But the National Archives documents they want have to do with his executive branch functions. I mean, the secret documents
right.
one assumes are from his duties of as vice president.
Right, but, in the executive order, the president and the vice president are discharged separately from agencies, in which it would be awkward if the president who is a supervisor of this office, was asking that office to come and investigate himself. And in this executive order, the president is saying that the vice president is not different than him.
And when did he decide that? Just in 2003? I mean, he...
In terms of the executive order?
Vice president,
I need to go back.
Did it for a couple of years before that. He just
right.
was doing that out of the good of his heart, or...
I think so.
Okay. Also has a 30-year history, which is part of why the National Archives Oversight Office is concerned, because other presidents had provided, other White Houses had provided this information. And so it really is a break with a pattern. Why is that necessary?
I don't know why the EO was amended in 2003, and I can try to go back and find out. What I do know is that when the president wrote this EO, it's clear in the reading of it that he does not intend for the vice president to be seen as separate from himself, and they are not asking someone who is subordinate to them to come in and investigate them. And I think that the ISU office has had only a complaint about the vice president's office, not about other places within the executive branch. And so that can be resolved either by the Justice Department or, as I am telling you, as the president's spokesman, he did not intend for the vice president to be seen as separate from himself.
Is the president satisfied that Alberto Gonzalez has not responded yet after 5-6 months of a request by this office to have this issue mediated?
I think I have not asked the president if he's concerned about that, and I would ask you to call over to the Justice Department to find out about their timing.
Gonzalez recused himself because he was White House counsel.
No, I don't think that's necessary. Martha, you had another question?
I mean, if the argument was so clear that you're making about he wasn't part of the agency, then why didn't he make that argument coming back? That's not the argument he made.
I don't know why he made the arguments that he did.
It
might not have been clear to them, and I don't know all the discussions that they had back and forth between the vice president's office and ISU. What I'm telling you is that in the reading of the EO and in asking about the interpretation of it, that's the answer I've got.
Dana, is the White House comfortable with the way the vice president is being portrayed in this Washington Post four-part series? I mean, two installments have come out now suggesting almost that he's out of control, that he's operating around the president, that people like John Ashcroft, who's attorney general, actually had to deal with the vice president, not the president, had to argue, I'm the chief law enforcement officer and should be included in discussions, legal arguments about how detainees are being held. Is the White House comfortable with this portrayal?
I think, you know, you've heard me say before that we don't do book reviews from the White House, and I think that that would, with the length of this article. But look, I think a lot of what is being talked about there is classified, dealing with classified issues and following the attacks on our country on 9/11. I'm not going to opine on those. I'm not going to say one way or the other about the articles. What I will say is that, number one, this country has not been attacked again, and number two, all that we have undertaken has been lawful.
Okay, but one specific example, there was the Bybee memo that was classified at one point but has since been made public, and it's been on Capitol, it's been out there, it's been in newspapers. The Bybee memo from 2002 dealing with torture. And it basically, this story today portrays the vice president's team as basically helping to draft that memo about how detainees are going to be held and tried, et cetera, where the limits on torture, and that basically it took 2 years before the Secretary of State Colin Powell and the National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice even knew that this memo had been written. This vast policy on the war on terror, the Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor did not know for 2 years. Is the president comfortable with the vice president essentially cutting out two of his top national security officials on this critical policy?
Look, I'm not privy to internal deliberations of that level. I don't know, and I am not. I'm not going to comment on any type of internal deliberations.
Do you really think that's the way a White House should operate?
Look, I've been around not as long as a lot of people, but long enough to see how the process works here, and I can assure you that the debate is vigorous and it is held. People that have strongly held views and they voice them, and they voice them loudly. And I am very comfortable with the process that we have in terms of how those debates
but how can you
get
say
settled.
It's a vigorous debate if the Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor were not involved in the
I'm
debate
not commenting
for 2 years,
on,
2 years.
Ed, I'm not commenting on that either
so
way.
How can you make the claim if you're not commenting?
I'm commenting on my personal experience at the
claim
White House.
That there's a vigorous debate. The top two national security officials were not involved in that debate. How could it be?
I don't know that to be true, Ed. So I'm not commenting. I don't know that to be true. So I'm not commenting on it.
Send someone out there who can use Stonewall. Is the president a member of the executive branch? Is he answerable to any law, to any executive order? I mean, what is this? What's going on here?
Helen, the president, of course, is head of the executive branch.
Any accountability to the American people?
Absolutely.
Does the vice president see top secrets in this administration as a member of the executive branch? Does he attend NSC meetings?
In his executive duties, as discharged by the president, he does see classified materials, yes.
And he is allowed to.
Victoria, go ahead.
We should get someone out here who can answer our questions.
Does the United States practice cruelty?
No. We have gone over this several times. I refer you to all the previous comments that we've had in the past. Steve Hadley came and briefed you all in September of 2006. The president has answered public questions about this. So has the Secretary of State on multiple occasions in front of Congress. So has the Attorney General. And we have maintained that we have protected this country in a way that does not involve torture.
So is that Article 1?
But there's a difference between cruelty and torture, is my understanding. The cruelty, by definition, is imposition of severe physical and mental pain or suffering, which is different from torture.
I'm not commenting on any type of techniques or anything else that is used in order to help get us information in order to prevent terrorist attacks on this country. I'm just not going to do it.
But you would say that we do not practice cruelty.
I can tell you flatly, as has been previously stated by the president himself and by members of his cabinet, that this administration has not used torture.
What?
Goyle.
Two questions again.
And photographs.
Graduation time at schools and colleges, and today president talking about No Child Left Behind. My question is that as far as No Child Left Behind, according to a report, U.S. education system has gone down and violence has increased in many schools here, and as far as children are concerned.
What's your question?
Immigrant children are doing better in schools, but is president going to talk about as far as increasing violence in schools today and education system has gone down?
I think the president today is going to talk about the move to reauthorize No Child Left Behind so that we can make sure that every child is reading at grade level by 2014 and that we have accountability for students, parents, and taxpayers.
And second, if I may, please.
I'm going to go to Brett.
Can I just rewind to the executive order one more time?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see, is the White House saying that you disagree with the argument the Vice President's office is making?
No, I didn't say that.
I know, but what are you saying? I don't get it, really. I mean, is the White House at odds with what the Vice President is saying? The reason
is
not...
I'm not opining on that, and I'm not going to comment on it, but what I'm saying is that I think that it's irrelevant in this regard. The vice president and the president are treated as one and the same in this EO. And the argument that is being made by ISU that has that disputes whether or not the vice president should be seen as an agency has a disagreement with that. That's their right. They can have a disagreement with that. But the president never intended for the vice president to be treated as an agency in this executive order.
That's the different rationale. I mean, I'm talking about living up to the executive order as the president signed it. Is the vice president...
Yes, absolutely. The vice president is in compliance with the executive order. You bet.
Dana, is the office of the president and the office of the vice president, not are they being treated the same way? Are they acting in the same way in terms of...
When the vice president is doing duties that the president has asked him to do under his executive function, then yes, he is performing similar duties to what the president is doing.
Is the office of the archive able to get a degree of compliance with the EO from the from the office of the president that it's not able to get from the office of the vice president?
No, the vice president is in compliance with the EO, as is the president. So that shouldn't be a question.
So any kind of inspections they want to make, any kind of procedures that they want
to... Does not apply to the president or the vice president, who have the responsibility to discharge and oversee.
Does the National Security Council?
The NSC does. They do. They do comply.
Dan.
Yes.
The case of Alan Johnson, the BBC prisoner in Gaza, is getting much more serious. Does this administration have any advice either for the people who have told him or for the British people? Do you favor military action against him, or do you favor compliance with his demand?
We stand behind our British allies in calling for his unjust holding to end immediately and for him to be returned safely to his family.
Is there any desire or strategy to comply with some of their demands to gain his release?
I'm not going to comment on that, and I'll have to refer you to the British authorities for that. They're leading that. I'm sorry, I was going to go to Roger, and then I'll come back.
I think she's got the same question.
Oh, about how convenient.
Any new information on Tony Blair becoming an international envoy? And has the president talked to him in the past few days?
I don't believe the president has talked to him in the past few days. And if there's more to report on that, we'll let you know as soon as possible.
Well, there are reports out that he's going to be named tomorrow. So is that true?
Not that I'm aware of. Mark?
Yeah, back to the Oversight Office. They've asked for an opinion from the Justice Department. You're declaring from a podium that the Vice President isn't compliant. So that just sounds like there's nothing for the Justice Department to render an opinion.
If the Justice Department wants to review it, and it is under review, as you've pointed out, they've not responded yet. But what I'm saying is that, I hate to be repetitive, but the President meant for the Vice President to be the one and the same with him in this executive order.
Sounds like if the Oversight Office is waiting for an opinion, they shouldn't hold their breath. You've already rendered it.
I've given them what the President's interpretation is. Keith.
Complying with the order. You don't mean complying that he's turning over documents. You just mean
they're complying with the executive order. Correct.
As you read it.
As the President intended it.
Yes.
Not just as I read it.
Keith,
go ahead.
Has the President turned over documents and allowed inspections that the Vice President's office has not done?
In terms of the White House office?
Yeah.
I don't believe we do.
The White House also has not allowed those same inspections that the Vice President's office.
The President has discharged as their supervisor the ISU to do these inspections at agencies of which the President and the Vice President are not a part.
So the President has not had those inspections either. That's what you're saying?
No.
Okay. Has he been asked to have those inspections by the National Archives?
Not that I'm aware of, but again, it's the President that's discharging the EO. He is the sole enforcer.
Okay, and just lastly, it's a little surreal. I mean, how is it possible that you can't give an opinion about whether the Vice President is part of the executive branch or not?
Look, all I know is that
it's a little bit like someone saying, "I don't know if this is my wife or not."
I think it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Well, no, but honestly, I mean, there's no.
No, honestly, I think it's more complicated than that. I do.
But, Dana, one difference is from this podium came the explanation that the President never intended for this to apply to the Vice President. When there was communication from the counsel of the Vice President's office to ISO, the rationale was different. It was that there was a split in the duties, the role of the Vice President, and that's where we're getting this. He's part of the legislative and the executive. So it seems that everybody wasn't on the same page when they were first responding to the National Archives.
I don't know that to necessarily be true, but I can see if I can get from the Vice President's office more of an explanation, because they could have been thinking of one and the same argument, and I don't have the legal mind that can draw those two together.
A staff member of the Vice President was asked to turn over material, and the staff member was afraid that they would get in a Scooter Libby type situation if they don't turn it over. Do they have the same protection? Now, we're talking about staff members, not the President or the Vice President.
I think you're talking about apples and oranges, because I think that the Vice President and the White House, the President and the Vice President, I think that extends to their offices and the people who actually work for them as well.
I mean, that's very important. Because if somebody
I think I just answered it, but I can look into it again.
Dana, for 200-plus years, everybody from civics class on up has had a certain understanding of the way our government works. And this EO clarifies more than 200 years of constitutional scholarship about the way our system works?
I think maybe it's me, but I think that everyone's making this a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. The President writes an executive order. He says
I'm
agencies...
The part where the Vice President says that there's a question about whether or not he's part of the executive order.
And the point I was trying to make for you before is that I think that for the past two centuries, the Senate has provided payment to the Vice President for his duties as a member of the government. And I'm just saying that he has roles in both branches. I don't think that it's as clear-cut as you're trying to make it.
The Vice President of the United States is...
He has function. I think that there's no denying that he has functions in both the legislative and the executive branches. But that is a fact.
But it seems like the Vice President is saying he's not responsible for the rules of either of those.
Yeah.
No, I think that he's saying, especially when it comes to the executive branch, is that the duties that he's given are given to him solely by the President of the United States. And some Vice Presidents don't do as much as he does in the realm of national security or in policy development as this Vice President does. But this Vice President was given executive duties to handle.
How is being a part of another branch, I guess it's debatable, but let's, how is that an out?
It's not that's irrelevant because the president never intended for the vice president to be subject to the executive order.
The office of the vice president introduces that into the argument, into the debate. Well, we're not part of the executive branch.
I think that is also a fact. And as I said to Kelly, I'll see if I can get more from the vice president's office to see how they connected the two, or if they didn't.
He can argue he's part of both, but he can't possibly argue that he's part of neither. It seems like he's saying he's part of neither.
Okay.
You don't have an opinion on that?
You have me thoroughly confused as well. Joni.
You don't even know his wife.
On North Korea, the BDA issue was agreed to be resolved back in February. Can you comment on why it took so long, and did the transfer actually finished taking place this morning?
The North Koreans have said that the transfer has taken place. For a final confirmation of that, I'd have to refer you to the Treasury Department. And I think it took a long time because it's a complex financial maneuver of which I also don't understand. But Treasury Department can provide you more information.
Can you also comment? Do you think this financial measure was an effective tool for diplomacy?
I think that what we're doing is we're moving to now to the point where North Korea is saying that it is going to dismantle and halt your enrichment Yongbyon facility, and I just heard that Chris Hill is giving a briefing at 2 p.m. today, so he'll have a lot more firsthand information than I do.
Dana?
Anybody else? Okay. Les?
Dana, thank you. Two questions. First, does the president believe that it will be perceived by most American citizens that the United States really has equal justice under law if Scooter Libby is allowed to be sent to prison while Sandy Berger and Marion Barry remain free?
I'm going to give you the standard no comment line on that, Les. I know how disappointed you are.
Yes. Yesterday, New York Times published a column which contended that Vice President Cheney is, and this is a quote, bordering on lunacy and referring to him as Crazy Dick. And my question, neither the president nor the vice president would tolerate any of their staffs referring to Pinch Sulzberger, the left-wing lunatic, would they?
We don't refer to him at all.
Then I'm right.
Can I just follow?
The president would
not. Let me go back to Jim.
Just one last big picture question about sort of the cumulative effect of all this. You have this big series in the Post out about the vice president. You've had this steady series of ways in which it is easy to see that he has created a certain number of questions for you and others to answer in the administration. Does the president consider him a liability, or does he consider him more of a liability now than maybe he did at any point in the past?
I don't think he thinks of it that way. I think that the president thinks of the vice president as a very close and trusted advisor, somebody who has nothing but the country's best interests at heart. And I think that there's been a lot of accusations about this vice president going back for many years. And as much as we would like to always get fabulous, glowing press, that's not always the case. And so we take the good with the bad in terms of press coverage. And but I think that every day the president relies on the vice president's good advice.
Given the way that a number of initiatives and ideas and policies that the vice president's been driving on have turned out, do you think the president wants to rethink or should rethink his reliance on the vice president?
Let me give you three examples. First of all, as I mentioned before, this president was president during the time of 9/11 when 3,000 of our citizens were killed by terrorists. We have not had another terrorist attack on our soil, and that, as the vice president has said, is not an accident. Secondly, the other policies that this vice president has worked on include things such as tax cuts, of which the entire country benefited, and we continue to feel the benefits from with this good economy. So I think that the vice president's impact is broader and deeper on lots of good policies that have come out of this White House.
Are you saying the end justifies the means, following up on the first part of your answer?
What do you
mean? You're saying that we haven't had another attack.
I think that's a little bit unfair since about three or 5 minutes ago I just finished saying and reiterating that this administration has not tortured. But I will say that the policies we put in place, for example, the terrorist surveillance program, of which we are listening in on phone calls coming into or out of this country, where one person on that phone call is a suspected terrorist, has saved lives. And that came from General Hayden, now the director of the CIA. I think that's what is not an accident.
Does the administration support waterboarding, for example, which is written about again today? It's been considered a war crime since 1901.
And I appreciate you trying. I am not going to comment.
You said you don't believe in torture, but that's one tactic that
I appreciate it. I am not commenting on it.
Are you saying we have not tortured?
That's what I'm saying.
How can you say that?
Has the vice president's influence in this administration waned in recent months? Do you think he's as influential as he was at the beginning?
I think that's a storyline that a lot of people have tried to explore. I have not witnessed it myself. He was there today at the meeting with the Estonians, and he was there last week when we met with the president of Vietnam, and I see him regularly. He was actually there at the civets this morning with Prime Minister Maliki. I mean, he's influential. His staff is good to work with, and we enjoy having him around.
About immigration, since it's a critical week, what's your sense of the state of play on that? And are you worried at all that there's a split in the Republican Party that could spill over to other issues like Iraq war funding in September, education, No Child Left Behind?
I think there's no doubt that there's been a heated debate about the immigration bill. I don't think that is limited to our party, the Republican Party. I think that as those rifts have been felt in the Democratic Party as well, but might not have been as well publicized as the ones in the Republican Party. And I think that going forward, one, we're going to have a vigorous debate in the Senate this week. We're glad that the bill's going to be called back up. There's going to be 11 amendments aside, so 22 total. They've got a lot of work to do, and we'll see if we can improve that bill to make sure that we have border security first in addition to the other pieces of the bill that the president wants. But I also think, Ed, that there are a lot of things that bring the Republican Party together, including the issues of fiscal discipline and spending, life issues, for example, the president vetoing the stem cell bill last week. And so we have a big tent party, and there's lots of issues that bring us together. And when there are ones where we have disagreements, we can do that as friends.
And can I follow on that? It seems like the president has adopted a strategy on the immigration front of challenging lawmakers to show courage. He said that in his radio address, and he said that a few weeks ago in a major speech. How is that a successful strategy for winning votes on this matter?
I think what the president means by that is that these are tough issues. These are ones that go to the core of different districts. You have, in some places where you need more workers, there's a great demand for a temporary worker program. You have other communities that are there on the border that are feeling the very tough impacts of having illegal immigrants who are there stressing their social services. And that I think what the president is saying is that have the courage of your convictions, have the courage to pick up the phone and talk to your constituents, have the courage to come and debate the president and debate him loudly if you need to. But at the end of the day, the president believes that this is a bill that this country needs in order for us to be both prosperous and safer.
But it seems pretty clear that the senators know that this is a tough, difficult issue. It seems like, in a way, he's calling them out as much as he is trying to engage
them. I would disagree, because I think that because the very fact that the bill is actually coming back on the floor and they're going to have 22 more amendments to debate shows that the members of the Senate from both sides of the aisle have courage in order to try to take this issue on. Does anyone say thank you?
Of course, thank you.
I don't know when I can leave.